This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
One of our mainstays from, I guess it would be day four of the show being on the air in its original concept, is the roundtable. We'll get to it in just a couple of moments, but Grant, I always think about how this is, as we talk, main staples for the show and how it evolves. And one of the things I've always tried to do when rolling out the roundtable is think about, who do I have on? What are we going to talk about, in the sense of what kind of feel do you want it to be? Do you want it to be a heavy roundtable? Do you want us to laugh through it and or get into some things? And sometimes it's unique. I'm planning, yeah. Grant, to tell me. I'm planning a very unique one soon. But go ahead, sir.
Ooh, interesting. No, yeah, it's, I feel like there's a different like vibe that, like, even just with the kind of lead off story that I, just the roundtables that I've been on, I've come off of some of them like, oh, this was a lot of laughs, and others is like, wow, it got like intense. So I'm curious what kind of planning you do to create the vibe that you want to create.
Well, the biggest sell on it was making sure, when I'd asked people originally, because they figured we'd get them on here and embarrass them in some way, and I'm like, why? That's terrible radio and terrible television. Like, I want us to have fun. There's no wrong answer. It's an opinion. And we know the guy who really has no wrong answers in his repertoire is our returning guest today, AMI communication specialist, Greg David.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just say it.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I don't know. I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
Nice to have you around, Mr. David. Hope you're well.
I am, Kelly. Thank you for taking me away from the Blue Jays game, where they're currently losing 2-1. It is pouring rain in Kansas City. Yet another reason why spring baseball should be played under a nice roof like the Rogers Center.
Those poor people in Kansas City. Those poor Blue Jays. It'd be nice if somebody in the first three batters would hit a home run, would go on a streak, instead of all those poor rookies that are carrying the team on their back.
That would be nice. It's early in the season. That's what people keep telling me. It's early in the season, so I shouldn't give up yet.
Yeah, as long as they win series, they always say that's the best way.
Yep.
But baseball, the one sport with day games, getaway day games and stuff like that, and what a feel. Like, even if you're soaked in the rain in Kansas City, where you expect that cold and rain, it's baseball. Also, almost May.
Yeah.
Greg, appreciate you doing this. Guys, I got a few things I want to kind of get your opinions on, some thoughts, as we do with the roundtables. I select through a bunch of things and throw them out there for conversation. Bans on book bans are on the rise stateside.
After conservative groups sought to ban books dealing with sexuality, gender, and race in Bloomington, Minnesota, a not-straight 18-year-old, Shay Ross and friends, organized and helped persuade their school board to make it much harder to do so. Minnesota is one of several Democratic-leaning states pursuing bans on book bans. Washington and Maryland passed them this year, Illinois last year. Over 4,000 books were targeted last year, says the American Library Association, a big increase from the year before. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
So if you look at the year before, there's been bans, Greg, and then you had 4,000 this year. And I don't even know if, like, remotely, who the heck knows 4,000 books to come out with and ban, not to mention leaving stuff for you still to read. To me, it seems so outlandish, because I can't even imagine what books. Again, you're going to have your books that, yeah, okay, maybe you don't want kids studying in school and it being reading, required reading. I understand that. But out and out banning of literature in a free state, you don't have to read it. Yeah. If it's not meant for a younger audience, you shouldn't be shoving it on them and they shouldn't be reading it. We should be doing the work to, yeah, no. But there is that point in life in a democratic country where you're allowed to take the choice of if you're going to read that book or not, and either, you know, take from it what you will, Greg. I find this shocking, especially when we hear that kind of number of books. It's a little beyond just being To Kill a Mockingbird, which was ridiculous enough.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you use that example, To Kill a Mockingbird, because I remember reading that and also The Catcher in the Rye. Both of those yes. were required reading when I was in grade 8 and the early years of high school, I believe, because it was so long ago. Yeah, it blows my mind. You know, to me, if somebody tells me that I can't read something or can't listen to something or can't watch something, I'm going to go out and try and read, watch, or listen to any of that stuff. When they were putting stickers on the hair metal albums in the 80s, that just made me want to go out and check them out all the more. But what I would love is, you know, you mentioned that clip mentioned 4,000 books. I would love for somebody that is pro book banning, I'd like to go up to them and say, okay, now out of the books on this list, I want you to read some of these books, actually read them, not rely on the opinion of somebody else. And I want you to make notes on why you think this book should be banned. I'd be really interested to see whether anybody would bother doing that extra homework to try and have a discussion with me about why a book should be banned. I just don't understand it at all. And I bet they wouldn't do the work either.
No, they wouldn't. I would also like to know, Grant, the criterion. You know, we can sit here and say, and the first one always to come to gratuitous sex or content that would be, you know, for young, too young for my racism, a few things like that, propaganda for Nazism or something like that. But, okay, there's three things. To ban 4,000 books, you're going to have a lot of things on that criterion list, Grant.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting some of the rationales that I've read. For example, someone who wanted To Kill a Mockingbird taken out of schools, I think a couple years back maybe, it's amazing because their criticism, and this goes to Greg's point of like, why don't you actually read the book and see what it's about? Their criticism was how many times the book used a racial slur. And if they actually would have read the book, they would have seen that the author was against that particular slur and was mentioning it in the context of something that's not appropriate to say. And here's why it's not appropriate to use that term. And yet the people did not seem to be informed enough to even kind of recognize that the book was not condoning that, quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. It was outraged mm-hmm. against using it. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm personally of the belief that, you know, especially young people, they're going to find information on, you know, sexuality, relationships, whatever it is. And if they don't get informed information from us, or they feel like it's being censored and it's shameful and secretive, they're going to find it from other sources, and it's going to be even less appropriate than what we would like them to find. So,
yeah, and source is a lot more available to everyone that we could easily suppress in some fashion. But we say, well, no. You know, we have parental controls and things like that. And we are basing it on parental, that this is young people we're talking about when banning these books, when no, that there's books that we're talking banning, this banning is for all. And I remember my mom coming to see me. I was in To Kill a Mockingbird here in London in a play. And my mom came to see it. And my mom was of that belief too. I don't want to go in there. I don't want to hear some of the racial stuff that's said in that. I'm not.
Yeah,
my mother loved it. But my mother loved it, not just because her son was in it, but I think my mother did what you guys were talking about. She actually sat back, watched the play, and realized the use and why the use of the word in that context, and that it made sense to her as an adult. Again, for those who want to see things a certain way, you're going to, whether you're for it or against. Equifax Canada says it's exploring how rent data could factor into credit scores to help make credit and financial services accessible to more people. Take a listen.
The agency has been testing small volumes of rental payment data for a while and found including alternative data could establish or enhance credit scores for about 5 million more Canadians. In its latest budget, the federal government said it's calling on banks, fintechs, and credit bureaus to prioritize launching tools that would allow renters to opt into reporting their rent payment history. The government says this could help more renters become homeowners, as on-time rental payments could strengthen credit scores and make it easier to qualify for a mortgage or a lower interest rate. Michelle Zedekian, The Canadian Press, Toronto.
I remember I wanted a line of credit, and because I didn't own a home, nope, wouldn't have mattered if I owned a home and was pathetically in debt. They would have handed me a line of credit. But no, there's no home basically for us to take away from you if you default, is what I interpret it to. I became very upset being a person with a disability in a different circumstance. I had a job at the time that I applied. I think I did apply once without having a job just to get a credit card because I wanted to establish more of a credit rating for myself. I've always said, why can't you count rent? Why can't you count the fact that I pay my phone bill on time or any of these things? And there was the theory years ago, fellas, that, well, yeah, but that's your phone bill. That's your rent. If you can't pay those on time, my goodness. So we don't use that. We assume those are important. You're going to pay them. But yet so many of us grant default on it anyway. Can't be assumed. And I think this is overdue to try to use a different method to help people, even if we're just trying to get people more easier to get homes because of the conditions we're having in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Credit reporting and rating is just such a huge subject that I think most of us, definitely me, don't even understand fully, like the difference between what sort of accounts, like, you know, your postpaid account on your phone bill is literally like a credit card. You can accrue a bunch of charges. You just get your bill at the end and you're responsible for paying whatever it is. But some other thing, this is not on your credit report. It just doesn't make any sense. And especially, what's really interesting is if you read more deeply into this, like, if, for example, I believe paying your entire credit card statement and stuff up front is actually leads to a slightly worse credit score than if you don't pay everything off. That's like, it's just all fascinating to me. It just goes over my head.
Yeah, I remember that, Greg, trying to do so and saying, well, so if I pay it quicker and be told, no, slow down. No, you don't want to do that because you're trying to establish yourself.
Yeah. And I agree with everything that both of you said. I think that there should be other platforms, other means of payments to show that there is responsibility there and that you're able to pay these things off. I mean, I'm upfront. I admit when I was 19, 20, I had bad credit, and it's because I was able to get a credit card. It was actually a Sears card. And, yes, you know, I was using it to pay for gas, Kelly. And I got behind on the payments, and it ruined my credit for a long, long time. So I think there's also a maturity in there. You know, I'm much more mature now, able to pay bills and do have credit. But how many people make that mistake when they're younger and all of a sudden they get access to credit cards and get themselves into debt problems, not realizing that something like this can come down the line where you can't get a house or something like that as a result of your bad credit. So yeah, absolutely. Give people more opportunities. But I also, guys, think, you know, and Grant, you know, brought up a really good point. I think there needs to be some real education into this as well. It isn't just about going out, grabbing a credit card and you know, paying off most of that monthly payment. They really need to be educated in how to save money as well, because that's something that I didn't learn until later in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just really, really quickly, I was just going to say, a few years ago, I got into some credit card debt, unfortunately. And what's amazing is I immediately started getting offers that I was pre-approved for more credit cards and stuff like that. And like, how do they figure that out? I don't know. But they're obviously just trying to get me to dig a deeper hole.
Well, and isn't that tantamount to picking on someone that has a gambling addiction, a drug addiction, or an alcoholic? It's almost like saying, oh, we notice you spend this much money at these bars. Here, would you like to get on a program that we have here to have it delivered right to your house and, you know, the hoses to pump it right into your blood supply? I find that kind of just our society. I know when you're talking, Greg, as a kid, I got a credit card, but I had to put money on it first and then use it. And that's ridiculous. Smart. I'd go to the Bay and buy something. I need headsets, just something because my dad said, Kel, you got to have that credit. I want to talk a little bit about animals. This is something we kind of touched on recently. I talked about on the program. Heartbroken visitors in Kansas are mourning the death of an ostrich named Karen.
Karen was just 5 years old, known for playing in water and dancing when prompted by employees at the Topeka, Kansas Zoo. She may have been playing when zookeepers say she reached outside her exhibit fence and grabbed an employee's keys, promptly swallowing them. They got stuck, and despite numerous attempts at getting them out, surgically and non-surgically, the zoo says it had no choice but to euthanize Karen the ostrich, who, the zoo says, died in staff's hands. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
So we were talking about the relationship people have with their pet, but I'm kind of curious, Grant, is there a pet, an animal like this at a zoo or a place? I used to go in and talk to the parrot at the one pet store in London, downtown at the market years ago, and was heartbroken when that poor guy died. Any Aww. Situation like that for you?
Not really. I don't usually, would not typically go to a zoo or anything like that. There is this really cool cat cafe in Vancouver, and they partner with a cat rescue society to try and rehome cats that need to be adopted. And I always used to go there and visit our favorite cats, whatever. And it was, you know, kind of an ethical thing that they were doing too. So, yeah.
Oh, that is nice. How about you, Greg?
Kelly, what a horrible story. What are you trying to do to me? Trying to upset me? And as an aside, I wish that there was video of you speaking to the parrot in the pet store. I bet that would have been fascinating. Because,
it was,
man,
ridiculous. They'd kick us out.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, you know, an awful story. I love animals. I'm actually cat sitting a cat right now that isn't mine and have been for the last couple of months. And on the property that we live in here in small town Quebec, we have turkeys that come by. So we get to see the babies growing up, and we've seen baby deer growing up as well. And so, yeah, I love animals. And so this is just a horrible story that about this poor ostrich named Karen. I guess at least she was surrounded by those that loved her, but wow.
What an accidental death to whoever was part of that, if that's what happened. You'd feel awful. And about the wild turkeys, just come out here to Riverside Drive in London. They have their own crossing and everything like that, where they wave hi to the nice people as they go by. Greg, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for having me.
Greg David joining us from our communications department. And we do the roundtable every week at this time right here on Kelly and Ramya. Next week, I'll give you a heads up. I think a unique one, I'll say the least. I think there'll be a lot of stories and some laughter. It'll be a lot of fun. So that's your tease, since I keep getting accused of never talking about what's on the roundtable. Grant. Well, there I go. Already talking about next week's roundtable. We'll step aside for a moment, folks, and when we return, we'll wrap up the show, see what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown. They start at 9 a.m. in the morning. And beware, if you're in Florida, something icky, maybe not, very much full of life, is floating your way.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Ramya after this short break.
Hi, I'm Ramya Amuthan. Join me weekly for AMI Audiobook Review, the podcast that explores new titles, introduces us to famous narrators, and updates what's hot at the Center for Equitable Library Access. Download episodes of AMI Audiobook Review from your favorite podcast provider.